Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And boy, things have changed. It's starting to cool off a little bit. Then all of a sudden, we warm up a smidge, and tomorrow's going to be rather relatively nice. But we have a great show in lined up for you, given that the weather's turning a little bit warmer than what it was the last week. And in addition to that, I want to also bring to you our good friend Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is co-hosting the show with me this morning in Ernie's absence. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. It's good to be back.
Always good to be back.
I love it up here. It's always it was easier to get up today. So, you know, it was last time I was on, it was about a couple months before the last time I was on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was only a couple weeks ago. It was a little easier.
Good.
A little easier this
That's
time.
Good. I'm glad you're finding it easier. So, what do you think about the weather? What do you think? Have we had some ample rain is my question.
I think we finally caught up a little bit. It feels like we're moist out there. It's good for the trees. I think the color looks a lot better. You know, it's November. I mean, last time we were on a couple weeks ago, we were worried about what things were going to do and how things were going to look and what kind of moisture. And, well, things did change in 2 weeks, that's for sure.
That it did. And, you know, I think there's some decent moisture in the ground, which is very beneficial for a lot of our newer planting type of things. If you planted some trees this year, some shrubs, perennials, you name it. You know, that added amount of moisture. We were dry there a little bit in September. And the other day I went up to Indianapolis for a Fertiloom meeting, and it was really interesting. It seemed like about every 50 miles I noticed a change in the color of the trees.
Really?
Yeah, because we're starting to see some color here.
Yes.
Probably not what we would typically see because it was dry there for a bit. And what do trees do? They'll shed their leaves a little prematurely just to hold on and survive. That's that internal mechanism that they have, knowing that they're stressed. But as I went a little further north, I noticed I started really seeing a change in the color. And then as I got closer to Indy, you know, it started to get, and of course it was gray and rainy too.
Sure.
But that color wasn't as abundant as it was halfway in between Cincinnati and Indy. So just that short span, what is it, 120 miles roughly?
Probably, yeah.
It's interesting how the picture changes.
Well, and what was amazing is 2 weeks ago, all the early trees that usually drop anyways, there was no color to much of them. I mean, there's a lot of brown, dropping leaves, not a whole lot of that beautiful color we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And then about a week ago, I noticed, you know, the red maples really started to shine. At least over in northern Kentucky specifically is where,
right.
You know, even through our subdivision, there's a lot of maples along the main drag, and they were absolutely gorgeous this last week.
Yeah,
they still are holding color.
But they're starting to show off, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. And you know what? It's nice to see because, I mean, you and I both talked about how if it doesn't rain and we don't get a little bit of change here, that all of a sudden we're going to not have that beautiful of a fall. And
It's a little, you know, I think last year started a little sooner, but you know, things all come into play when it's weather related. You know, Mother Nature, what she throws our way really dictates a lot of what happens with the color of the trees. My neighbor across the street has a couple of red maples, and the one this year, now what else did he had taken upon himself to do this past summer? He watered his lawn less.
Okay.
So now I'm led to believe that that has something to do with one of his maples because it looks more orange. I posted it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
So it has more of an orange color than it does the red color, but his sunset is starting to take on that red.
Is it starting to show the color?
Yeah, the red.
Yeah.
But they're supposed to both be sunsets, and I know they aren't.
Oh,
or
okay.
Is it possible that, you know, a lot of those trees are hybridized or crossed?
Right.
Could they revert back to a degree to some coloring? I don't know
that answer, but I've always believed a lot of it. Well, it's Mother Nature taking care of herself. I mean, sometimes I remember at our old garden center 20 years ago, we had a sweet gum tree in the back. It was kind of tucked in with the woods, so it was beautiful on three sides, and the one side was kind of up against the woods, wasn't as full as normal, but you know, that tree would change colors and be different colors every year. Some years it would be orange. Some years it would be yellow. Some years it'd be mixed. And even the maples that I was just talking about, you know, the ones in our neighborhood seem to be a little on the bottom, a little more orange. And as they go up to the top, they're definitely getting that beautiful red we're used to. And it's such a beautiful tree. And that's why we plant. I mean, we love our maples. So because
I love the sweet gum. Do you like the sweet gum?
I love the sweet gum tree.
Regardless of the spiny balls.
The spiny, you know, balls. But those things were great for artillery when we were a kid, man. I mean, my brothers and I mean, you get three boys, and then there was a bunch of boys in the neighborhood. We'd collect them, you know, and we would have fights with them, you know, which, you know, probably not the smartest thing in the world, but I can't be accused of ever being doing the smartest thing. But, it was a great time, and, you know, for that, I love that tree because it brings back those memories. But the tree itself, it's a beautiful tree.
It is. It is.
When the color is showing what it's supposed to.
You know, there's a lot of factors that come into play when we see the changing of the colors, and a lot of it has to do with the amount of sunlight.
Yep.
You know, if you get a lot of overcast days, and which lessens the amount of sunlight, you start seeing that chlorophyll change in the leaves, and the sugar start breaking down. That's what really starts that color change.
And we had all the heat and all the sunshine.
Right.
And then we had the cool, cloudy days. And we've had a lot of cool, cloudy days lately, which is great for a lot of things, but we can get more into that later on in the show. But it makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense that all the color is starting to show now.
You're starting to see it. And it's just beautiful. I've been waiting for this, although we may not see as much color as we typically do. You got to take what, you know, what nature gives us.
Well, there was a lot of leaves that fell early. And I, like I said, 2 weeks ago, you and I were both sitting there going, wow, how much has fallen already? I mean, people were raking leaves and mulching their leaves and, you know, doing anything they can to clean up the yard. And, you know, the sycamores were brown and ugly and just dropping fast. And, you know, I had some tulip trees and some skyline honey locust trees, all of them, I mean, completely defoliated already. For me, being a tree guy, and I know you and I are we've talked about this, you're the same way. It's great to see the fall color. This is what we love about Cincinnati is we get all four seasons, and we finally got our fall.
Right.
It feels like it, too.
I hear you. You know, there's another tree that drops real early, and that's the old buckeye.
Oh,
you know, and I found out, you know, I told you I lost the buckeye.
Yep.
I found out I have one that's made its presence.
Oh, really?
I did find a couple. Yeah. So obviously there's another generation down in the back of my yard where I was like, yes.
So but, is that a good thing since today the Buckeyes got another big game?
Oh, you know what? They barely pulled one out last week. Gosh, that was a great game too.
And whether you're a Buckeye fan or not, it was a great game to watch. Or whether you're Penn State or even I don't have a dog in the fight. I just love watching sports, but. You know, what a great game that was. Let's go Buckeyes. Let's go Buckeyes.
I hear you. And then around the house, we got to take a quick break. 749-B105. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We have a great show in store for you today. A lot of ground we're going to cover. We're going to also talk about, don't forget it, it's a time to turn back the clocks, Bob.
Yes, I am excited. I love falling back. Give me that extra hour of sleep.
You don't like to fall forward, just backwards?
No, I don't like to spring forward. You know, I know we got to do it.
Right.
But now I will say there is one thing about falling back I don't like. It's going to be dark. It's 6:15.
I'm okay with that.
I'm not okay with that.
I like it, you know, especially in the morning. My dad likes it lighter in the morning. I like it darker. But
I'm excited. You know, I'm taking my son to school and it's dark, you know, but that's all right. I can handle that. I don't mind the dark in the morning, but I don't like it dark at night. I mean, you know.
Wait a minute, let me get my violin. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the kids, like Johnny, you know, our producer over there, John, Mr. 859. You know, those may have known this Halloween as Mr. Clean because he dressed up like Clean. You know, when it gets dark at 6, he thinks he's got to get out and party a lot earlier.
I'm not that young anymore, so I don't know what that's like.
I don't either.
I turn it in early. But anyway, we have a great show lined up for you today. If you want to stay connected with us, check us out on our Facebook page. If you have perhaps missed a past show, even the one we did a couple weeks ago, you can always go out to our podcast as well. Or email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com.
Bring it on.
It's like coming into the garden center. With that said, we have Kim from Independence with us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Kim. How are you?
Good morning. How are you all?
We're doing well. What about you?
Good. Good. Thank you. I'm up running, and I listen to you guys on my earbuds while I'm running.
Oh, awesome.
Right. That's awesome. Yes. How far are you into your run?
I run around 10 miles.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed. Yeah. That's great.
Saturday morning, I'm there with you guys. So.
Well, thank you.
But I have a question. A neighbor gave me tropical hibiscus three summer, about 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And it's been on my porch. It's been beautiful. And with all that cold weather, I brought it into the house, and within the last couple of days, it's terrible looking. All the leaves are yellowing. I hit a ton of bugs on it. All mm-hmm. those have fallen off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's don't be alarmed.
Oh, I've never had a tropical hibiscus, so I wasn't sure if that was normal or not.
Well, it is. You know, what's happening is that plant's environment has totally changed, and it's changed abruptly. And because of that, it's getting acclimated to being inside. And that's why, you know, when we do this, and kudos to you, by the way, it's worth trying to winter over. And if you don't try to winter it over, you'll never winter it over, right? So
right.
nothing
right.
to lose, a lot to gain. But it's pretty typical. Excuse me. What you really want to do, I like to encourage people to cut them back a little bit, because we're obviously reducing the amount of sunlight that they're accustomed to getting.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is slow them down, cut them back a little bit where there's less up top that has to be supported from the root structure, because as right. we bring them in, what we do, we have to back off our watering a little bit. However, you will still continue to water, but not obviously as much right. as what it was like when it was outside. Secondly, what I want you to do is refrain from fertilizing. We do not want to encourage any new growth. New growth, especially indoors, like this or not, most people think I don't have insects, but we all do. We just don't see them. But right. when you get new growth, that's the most tender part of the plant, and that's when the insects really like to say, hey, this is what's going on over here with this hibiscus. Let's jump it. So keep that in mind. I would also have a couple of things in your arsenal just in case there were some hitchhikers that we're going to talk about later on in the show, not those that you pick up on the side of the highway, but insects that, you know, rode the plant in when you brought it in.
Okay.
So things you can use, like triple action from Fertilome, insecticidal soaps. You can use some of the granular systemic products. Okay. But to go back to your original concerns, the yellowing is common. You're just going to deal with it.
Okay.
I would also remove some of the bloom buds. It's not uncommon to see them bloom sometimes, but...
Right. It was beautiful. It had several
right.
blooms on it and a lot of buds on it, you know? I mean, I've never had one, so I didn't really know how to winterize it, you know?
Right, right.
Did it happen to be outside when we still had a couple of those cold nights as well?
No.
No, you got it in before then?
Yeah. Every single night, yes. I brought it in. And, I mean, it's by a window. Does it matter where you put it in the house?
As much light as possible, so that's
a
good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then also keep it away from a vent where an air is going to blow on it or the heat's going to blow on it all winter
okay.
long.
Oh, okay. Right, right. Can I ask you one real quick question?
Mm-hmm.
I have succulent. Can you cut those back? It's gotten so big. I have it in the kitchen window, and it's huge. And it's so big it won't hardly stay in the pot anymore. And I didn't know if you could cut those back. I've never had a succulent.
It depends on the variety. I cut them back all the time and also take some of those leaves and try to propagate.
Okay.
Succulent, you know, grow babies with it. It's very easy
right.
to do. Yeah, and has it ever bloomed?
No. Somebody has given it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I've never had a succulent before.
Right.
It was tiny, and now it's so huge.
Right.
It's got long, you know, I'm not really sure what it is. You know, I'm not familiar with succulents, but it has grown so big, and it's doubling over. You know, like the stems are doubling over, and I was like, I don't know if I can cut it back or not.
Yeah, I have, and I've done it often with great success. And
okay,
a lot
good.
Of times when you see succulents bloom, at that point in time, it depends on if I don't know if all succulents are monocarpic, meaning they bloom once and that's it. And then you rely on, you know, new pups or babies, like forming around the base and growing outward. But always look for that type of activity as well.
Okay.
And those you can separate and start in a new pot.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I can cut it back. It's so big. Can't see my window anymore. All right. Great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, you guys.
All right, Kim.
Thanks.
Have a great weekend. Thank
All
you.
All right. You too. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
You know, that's a great question. And maybe when we come back from the break, let's talk about that a little bit. Because when you take your hibiscus in, it usually gets pretty ugly. You know,
it always does. Yeah.
And it's okay to be ugly. And usually most people come to me in the spring and they bring a picture in and they're like, what's wrong with this thing? So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
749-B105, Tony and Bob this morning. And Bob's co-hosting from Bars Nursery in Ernie's absence. Give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And if you're just getting up and joining us, good morning. I hope you got a good, strong cup of Joe, because I do. And in addition to that, Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery is co-hosting the show with me this morning in Ernie's absence, and he brought me in some smart water.
I'm trying to help you out.
I always need that.
Yeah, you definitely do. So
I'll take whatever I can get, Bob. Thank you, by the way.
You know, and I had to bring myself one because, you know how hard it is to try to even remotely fill a little bit of Ernie's shoes? It is not an easy task.
They're big boots to fill.
Big boots to
fill. Yeah, he doesn't wear shoes. He wears boots.
He wears boots, but, you know.
Even with shorts, he wears boots.
Is he on secret assignment again?
You know, I don't know. I think he's missing.
So yeah, that's all right. So hey, when we were going into break, we were talking about those hibiscus. So and it made me think of the people in the spring that always bring in. It brought me up to Kim's question about how it's not looking good right now. Mm-hmm. That's really typical, you know, and it happens.
Right.
And it's not going to really recover a lot over the winter where it's a beautiful plant and it's going to look like it did. It just doesn't work that way. But you want to just keep it comfortable, so to speak. So in the spring, right, it's still going to have some leaves on it. It's going to not look great until we get some of that summer heat. I mean, those things like it hot and warm.
Those are the conditions they thrive in. And you know what? They're not difficult to take care of. It's just you have to know what's likely to happen.
Right, and as long as you're prepared for that, you're mm-hmm. in good shape. But and you were talking about the hitchhikers, you know, that is one that I use in the back, always back by the patio area. We put them in containers and then put some flowers around them. We use the braided hibiscus, and I love them. But I'll tell you what, I get aphids on them every single year,
mm-hmm.
every year. And for me, one of the easiest ones that I've used is the high yield dust.
I like the dust. You speak about that often.
What I like about the dust, especially that one, is you can mm-hmm. use it even on livestock and animals. So it's pretty safe for that part. So if you have animals in the backyard and they brush up against it.
What about your alpacas? So you use your alpacas?
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. My quarter acre lot with the 10 alpacas I have, my neighbors get a little upset. But the dust really does a good job for aphids. And you leave it on there. So, you know, if you're having some of those hitchhikers, you know, I have my theories.
And what Bob's talking about, not those you see on the road with their thumb out.
No.
It's the insects that ride their way indoors via your plants. So those are the hitchhikers we're talking about. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to get your take on how you would treat them. Like, say, like right now, you've got your hibiscus and maybe you're seeing a bug on them.
Mm-hmm.
How would you treat them right now? What would you do?
Well, let me digress for a moment and go back to some past shows. We do bring up the timely fashion or the timely element of before it gets really cold or before we get that first hard frost, some things that you can do prior to bringing the plant in. And two of those things come to mind readily. One is using a systemic granular type of product.
Yes.
That you just simply sprinkle around the soil surface of the plant. And it's all based upon the diameter of the pot,
right?
Whatever size pot that plant's in. So therefore, every time you water or it rains, it slowly breaks down, gets into the plant system via its root structure, and it's almost like an immunization. So it protects them against insects. So that would be what I do. That's what I do first.
Right, and that really should have been done weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
but that's okay.
It's okay. Yeah, if you haven't done it, it's still okay.
Right. And secondly, you know, I'm going to use a product such as, I'm going to throw a couple out there. You know, you can use Fertilumes Triple Action, which is an insecticide, miticide, fungicide. You get three elements of protection from that particular product. You could also use 8. You could use 7. You could use Bayer's 3-in-1. You could use insecticidal soap. You can make up your own type of soapy solution.
Right.
And use one of those approaches and spray before you bring your plant in. Now, having said that, that's the past.
Right.
The plant is probably already indoors.
Or it's probably dead.
It's probably struggling.
Yeah.
And had you not taken any of those approaches, therefore, you have no other option but to visit one of us at a local garden center or nursery.
Right.
Pick up whatever you need to put into your arsenal to get rid of these hitchhikers.
Right.
Now, I will tell you this, and I have the luxury of taking my plants. We kept our plants in our sunroom. but right. I don't heat it. I have the ability to, but I just don't. And I take them down to the garden center.
Yeah.
I have plenty of room in the greenhouse. But the other day, I noticed on mine, now I didn't treat anything, but mine were inside.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of just because a plant's inside does not mean that it cannot get insects. That's where it's most likely to actually happen.
And that's 100% true, because every spring, the greenhouse, which is always covered, we're always battling some sort of insect when those annuals are getting grown early in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're going to see them sometimes in the house. You wonder how they get there, but they do.
Well, on my Scheffalera,
mm-hmm.
which is a beautiful plant, by the way, I saw a little bit of mealybug. Not much. But
it started.
Yeah, as I put it on the van to take down to the greenhouse, I'm like, this is what I tell people, why I won't take your plants into the greenhouse.
Right.
This is the stuff that we do not want to introduce into the greenhouse environment for that reason. So I had to take care of it. You know, I had to, right. and I left it outside of the greenhouse, but I took care of it. But it was mealybug. And I hear this all the time. Customers will say, well, I don't have insects inside.
Right.
Oh, yes, you do.
They're hiding.
I'm here to tell you, you do.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. And the other element that comes into play is that indoors, there aren't any natural predators.
Correct.
So, you know, kind of sometimes it just manifests itself into a real potential problem. And then all of a sudden, if you have a problem with a plant indoors where it's just laden with aphid activity, mealybug, scale, you name it, this is my suggestion to you. Chuck it. Get a new one. It's not worth.
Yeah. If something's not, you know, right, sometimes it's cheaper just to get rid of it. And we really don't want you spraying insecticides in the house.
And so. I think I kind of cut you off guard and I said, chuck it. You're probably thinking, I'm going to give it CPR. We'll talk about that when we come back. 749 B105, Tony and Bob in and around the house. Bob's with me in Ernie's absence, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And I think today's going to be kind of nice, Bob. You know, we're going to hit mid to upper 60s. Tomorrow, I think we're near 70. Maybe
a little more rain tomorrow.
Chance of showers. And,
yeah, it's going to be cloudy, they say, today. But, you know, it's going to be high 60s. That sure beats where we were.
We'll still get out and do some things. You know, I need to cut the grass, too, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I need to as well.
I have leaves everywhere. Speaking of leaves,
there's a lot to do still for people. I mean, if you ride around and you look at in lawns and yards, there's a lot of things still to do. And it's November, 4th? So... Yeah, you know, there's a lot to do. So, and I, you know, going back to our last segment there, I didn't realize you were so cold-hearted. Just chuck the plants. I can't believe it.
Everybody
always tells me what a nice guy you are. Here you are. Let's just throw them away. Let's get rid of that plant. You know.
Well, you know, sometimes you just got to call it the way that it is.
Hey, tell the truth.
You got to tell the truth. Now, I say that too, and it's probably has a lot to do with this, and it's because I'm in the industry and I have access to things.
Sure.
So it's easy for me to replace something, more so than it is maybe for someone else. You know,
right.
and I can get it a lot cheaper, and I'm just, because I'm a part of the industry.
Well, and also, but, you know, I wanted to go in and we were talking about how to treat things. Maybe you have right. one of those sentimental value to that hibiscus.
Well,
you know, it was my mom's, or you know, she just passed away. You know, whatever the reason is. But, you know, first of all, I mean, personally never encourage people to spray inside. So one thing I might try,
mm-hmm.
you know, is on a day like today where it's 66 degrees, take it outside if you have the capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do your spray or your treatment today.
Right.
That way you have time to let it dry while it's warm. Or even if you look at the temperatures, I don't think having it in the garage tonight, you know, from what I see, is going to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably spray it, let it dry, and then bring it back in the house. So I'm always cautious with stuff like that. So, but if you're using the soaps and stuff, you're probably
okay. I agree with you. You know, and good point. And I'm glad you brought that up, because there are a lot of plants that people have that are very sentimental. And, you know, maybe they were given to somebody when someone had passed away,
sure.
or grandma gave it to you when you were a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
So great point there. In that particular situation, those cases, yes, absolutely.
Now,
do what you need to do.
Now, another part we were talking about, you know, in the break earlier a little bit, it was about planting and maybe changing soil. On some of those plants, is this something would be a good time you would suggest go ahead and change the soil, or would you rather do it in the spring when you're bringing it back out?
I usually wait till the spring. What I try not to do, because I'm changing the environment of that plant's growing conditions by bringing something indoors, I'm less apt to make a radical change at that point in time versus before it really gears up and starts putting on some new growth and things are translocating upward, I make those changes, those like bumping it up to the next size pot late winter.
I agree with you. And that's something I just wanted to bring up. So, you know, in case somebody out there was thinking the same thing, do I pot it? Now, there are a few things like maybe some trees or something like that. If you're growing something that's going to be outdoors, yeah, that's probably fine right now. But some of those ones you're going to leave just sit indoors and you're not going to really do anything with. You're just going to kind of set them by the window or by light and just let them go. Let them kind of just rest. It's a great time just to let them rest unless you have to do some sort of a bug treatment.
No, I agree with you. You know, talking about, I like the fact that you brought that up about, you know, do you go ahead and transplant things? And I'm gonna bring up one plant in particular. I'm going to talk about the orchid.
Okay.
Now, the orchid, you're not obviously taking outside. And a lot of times, you know, we'll have orchids for years.
Right.
Okay. So, therefore, if I'm going to transplant an orchid, for example, or a plant that's been indoors, that's accustomed to being indoors and where it's typically located throughout the season,
right.
I'm going to go ahead and make that change.
If it needs it.
If it needs it.
Because it's used to it.
It's used to it. So, but with the orchid, I like to do that bump up if I'm going to change it. And you also have to use an orchid mix, which has bark, has charcoal. I will do that when it's kind of in a dormant stage.
Okay.
It's not in bloom because I don't want to disrupt the bloom period.
Sure.
And when it's in bloom and you go doing all that stuff and changing its environment, you're more apt to bring it under a great deal of stress.
Which is exactly what we do with outside trees. When do we want to move those?
In the fall.
When it's less stressed.
That's right. And that's the whole point of planting and relocating things in the fall.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So good point there. I know that going back to this is interesting too. Yesterday in the garden center, and this bothers me. Do you sell pottery?
A little bit, not a whole lot.
Okay, we sell a great deal of pottery. And on the pottery, I don't know why companies do this or manufacturers. It always says frost resistant.
Well, it says resistant.
Yeah, but why even put that on there?
Because
it's one of most anything. I mean, a little bit of frost is not going to hurt a pot.
No.
I don't care what kind of pot you have.
Frost shouldn't hurt a pot.
Now, let's talk about the element of freezing.
Correct.
Okay.
Especially those clay pots if it's cold and they're freezing.
Mm-hmm. So the question that was posed to me yesterday with that sticker on there, frost proof or frost resistant, excuse me, it made this gentleman think that, oh, I can leave it out all winter. No. And he's like, why not? And then of all things, he picked up on a plant, a hardy gardenia. Now, I don't know of a hardy gardenia.
No, not here.
I'm sorry. I don't know. But anyway.
He was zoned south, maybe, yeah, but
perhaps,
not here.
But, and it was a small pot, and this is the point that I'm trying to drive home. If you're going to winter something over outside, there's a lot of things that come into play.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about this, too, even further as we get into the show. We were even speaking about the types of plants that you maybe perhaps want to winter over outdoors in a container. But what happens when you're above ground, anything's likely to happen. You're playing Russian roulette. You're not in ground. You're above ground. So you got to take into consideration the elements, the wind,
yes,
and all those other things. But with those pots, keep in mind when you spend a lot of money on pottery, you know, if that, and this is why drainage is important. If it doesn't drain well, guess what? That soil stays really wet. It absorbs moisture and it freezes and it pushes outward. It expands. It has nowhere to go.
Right.
And it cracks that expensive pot. And then you're thinking, oh my gosh. And it's not the pot's fault. It's the elements.
Right.
And I, you know, pots to me are very, very important. For one reason, a lot of people like to garden with containers.
Sure, I do.
And using that right pot is of the essence.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a pot type that you like better?
I'm clay.
Like clay
pottery? I like clay. I like glazed pottery, too.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem with glazed pottery. It's beautiful. Okay. It's not cheap like plastic. But you have to be careful if you leave it outdoors or take half of the soil out. Take half of that volume of soil out.
Clay, if they're left out, will eventually deteriorate.
Clay will eventually deteriorate. So you got to keep that in mind as well. But it's, you know, it's all about just, I think sometimes some common sense, but people, we forget about pots outside as well.
Oh, and the outdoor winter elements, the cold, the freeze, the thaw, is very hard on some of our containers. And that's why if you can get them to where you can maybe keep them in the shed occasionally or get them under a porch or get them in the garage, you know, you'll be amazed how much that'll help them and how much longer they'll last.
You'll have them for a long time.
I have a lot of containers. And if you follow on Facebook, you'll see my wife post pictures constantly in the summer. And I use a lot of the fiberglass resins because the color stays, it's kind of all the way through. So it doesn't fade very, very, very quickly. I mean, I have some that are 10 years old. But they're movable and they're big.
Yeah, they're light in weight. Absolutely.
They're 30 inches tall, 24 inches by 24 inches, full of dirt. That's a heavy pot. So, but I can actually pick them up and move them. So I like those, but I'll still bring those in for the winter. I'll empty them a lot. A lot of times I empty them because the roots are all the way down to the bottom. And when I pull the dead flowers out, there's nothing left.
Got it.
But I'll go ahead and bring those even though they can withstand being outside. So I want them to last longer.
Do you do any holiday containers?
Outside? No, I just get my inner Clark Griswold and put up my 25,000 lights.
Oh, the 25,000 lights. Keep that.
Don't you remember? You made fun of me last year. I did. I'm keeping them up year round.
I didn't know if your wife did the containers. I'll back up. I'm sorry.
You know what? She's going to have to come see you for those.
I just didn't know if you changed that out because when we come back out of the break, I'm going to talk about plants that you can use in containers to keep them going all season long.
And you can put Christmas lights on them?
You can put Christmas lights on them if you want, which is not a bad idea.
Okay, good. I'm fine with it. Let's talk about it.
We'll tell you, three of the four plants I would likely use if I was going to put them in a container and keep them over the winter months. 749-B105, Tony with Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery joining us, filling in Ernie's absence, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, and it's going to be a great day to get some things done around outside that... we weren't able to take care of last week because we had a little bit of rain. I know that I need to mow my grass. It's growing like crazy. I have leaves everywhere. I need to clean out the leaves in the gutters.
Trim those perennials. Clean up the bushes.
Pull out my annuals.
Do your homework. You know.
I was coming back to my
Clark Griswold Christmas vacation, you know, when the little kid's talking to Chevy Chase and he goes, you want to help with the lights? He goes, whoa, look at the time. You know, I got to go do my homework, get a shower. You know, just one of my favorite all-time Christmas
movies. Yeah, he gave Russ all those lights that were all tangled up.
Here, I like that. Sort these.
Yeah, sort these out.
Won't be long we'll be doing that.
No, it won't be long. Nope, it won't.
Hey, it might be a good day to put up Christmas lights.
It might be a good day for you to go out and take those lights out of your spruce.
They've been there for 4 or 5 years. Why take them out now?
I can tell you're in Kentucky.
Hey, I just look at it as, you know, during Easter, they're Easter lights, you know. Then I have some lights during the 4th of July, so I have some 4th of July lights, you know. Whatever the holiday is, I just celebrate it, and that's what the
Festival of Lights year round, right there at the Bard household. I like it. Before we went into the break, we're talking about containers and various things, and also I'm often asked, and I'm sure that you are as well, in the garden center, you know, what's suitable to put in a sizable, you know, and mind you that the container has to be a size. If it's a small container, it's even worse when you're trying to go through the winter months. With something growing in it.
Right.
But something of size, maybe what? At least what? An 18-inch pot? 20-inch pot?
I'd say 24-inch pot. I mean, some of the small pots just have no freeze-thaw protection.
Exactly.
And they just die.
But what are you likely to use in a container like that?
One of the easiest ones. Yeah. The first one that I would use that I would at least gravitate and show is the Alberta spruce.
You know, I like the Alberta spruce. I really do. It's just one of those you got to keep an eye on, especially if it's in the landscape. Spider mites love the Alberta spruce more so than you probably do.
They don't grow fast. No. They're slow growing. They're easy to manage. They really can handle the cold temperatures quite well. The bigger pot you have, the better chance of anything surviving.
Absolutely. It protects the root system.
You know. They're great for decorating. They look like they're festive. So those who want to do outdoor decoration pots, it's a great for the, you know.
Put lights on them.
But the, you know me, I got to put lights on everything. So. Hey,
and you know, the beauty of that is because you can buy a 20 light set, 35 light set, 50 light set. So depending upon the size of the Alberta spruce, there's something suitable for it if you want to light it up.
It's a great, you know, centerpiece. And then you can put all your winter fillers and spillers if you want it to.
Oh, now you're getting fancy on me.
I know.
Yeah, you're doing that Carrie Sackstetter stuff on me, aren't you? Yeah, you're decorating.
I that's something you definitely don't want to take advice from me on that. We'll leave all that to Carrie.
Well, I always thought you had it in you. So,
No, that's why my wife does all the flowers.
Got
so
it.
I don't have to fool with it. You know,
right.
And I do have to give a shout out. You know, she has put up with me for 22 years today. Can you believe that?
Congratulations.
She's a saint.
Happy anniversary.
She's a saint.
Big time.
Yeah.
And now, are you stopping by the store, by the way, to pick up some flowers, take home to her?
You know, my wife works with flowers every day, so she doesn't...
Not the kind that I can send home with you.
She doesn't like those kind of flowers, you know, believe
me. Bobby, all women
love
flowers.
I'll take care of some other things. But yes, unfortunately, we have to work today and cover greenhouses, but, you know, we'll take care of
Elizabeth,
that
I'm offering up. Do you hear that?
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be there. Anything that's free, I'll be there.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Thank you, Tony. John, did you see how that worked out?
What a guy.
I know. What a guy. You know, you're right. All I had to do was sugarcoat it and kind of talk him into it, and he just do it for me.
Yeah. I took a hook, line, and sinker, didn't I?
Yeah, you fell for it.
But I like your idea on the Alberta spruce. I'm going to throw in there a boxwood.
Oh, yeah.
I love boxwoods. Maybe one in particular, the upright grower, Green Mountain.
Yep.
Green tower, something with some, you know, some vertical element to it going up.
Now, I like that. They'll handle the cold, but what I've found is if the pot is too small, those are toast.
They're toast.
They will not survive, so make sure you have a big enough pot. And don't forget a little water. You know, you think it's cold, but, you know, a lot of people will put these particular pots underneath the porch or underneath an eave of a house where they're not going to get any moisture naturally from the rain. Don't be stingy.
Yeah, don't be stingy. You know, you see them every day.
Right.
Maybe not. Most people go into their home through the garage.
Right. So don't be afraid to at least, you know, check your soil every so often and put a little water on things for that.
What about a little arborvitae action?
Once again, I like them as long as the pot's big enough.
Yeah.
You know, that is the main thing.
Well, you're not really, it depends on the size of the plant, too,
versus the
size of the pot.
And this is where you might buy the smaller size, sometimes a 3-gallon, to make sure it fits in the container pretty well.
Right.
So that'll handle some cold. I'll tell you one we used if you have a larger pot and you need some. We've actually used some juniper. And
I've
those
done,
actually
man.
Have worked well,
yeah.
and they'll
yeah.
handle the cold.
The nice spiral look.
Mm-hmm, spiral, or even just the columnar, or, you know, if the pot's really big, then you can even use some of the spreaders that spread a little bit because they have some really nice foliage this time of year.
That they do. You know, but anything like that, you know, even hollies might be a decent choice, but, you know, it's something I wouldn't rely on or count on a lot. But those are the plants that if you want to do something up close to the house in a container that has some relative size to it, rest assured you're probably going to get away with it. And you might get away with it for 3 or 4 or 5 years. You may not pull it off the first year. You never know. So as long as you go into it knowing that, hey, it's what it is.
Well, a lot of these are for the holidays.
Right.
So it's kind of like a cut Christmas or a Christmas tree, a live Christmas tree you bring in the house.
Mm-hmm.
You really eventually want to get that planted fairly quick. There's another show that we'll get into how to take care of that. But, you know, if these are in a container and you really just want them for the holidays, you know you're going to probably put them in the ground somewhere. Go ahead and get your hole dug, get it ready, and when we're done with the holidays, you can kind of, it's already outside, just put it right in the ground, and it'll survive just fine.
Right. But those are some tips. Those are some plants that you can use up close to the house in containers without any real worries.
Right.
And a lot of people, too, you know, they'll do that for a season or two, then they'll go ahead and they'll plant those somewhere out in the landscape and start over.
Right. The longest I've probably ever had much success with the Alberta spruce was about 6 years, and it was in a whiskey barrel. And that had a lot of volume.
It was the whiskey remnants that really made that.
It may have helped it grow.
It kept it around.
It seems to work for you.
Nothing wrong with bourbon.
But, you know, the Alberta spruce lasted the longest. The juniper was probably second. We did some of those for a local church and where people were driving through and they shouldn't have been. So there were some large containers with some upright juniper and then they added some color around that. And that seemed to work pretty well.
There you have it. Those are our choices if you want to winter something over in a container up close to the front door just to give you a little bit of seasonal pop. There
Christmas
it is.
Lights. Yeah. Put Christmas
and
lights
a little
on.
Christmas lights on it. But, hey, when we come back from out of the break, we're going to talk about, you know, this is the time of year tonight. I mean, we turn the clocks back. And some things I want to point out as long, you know, when we do that, we have a few reminders for you as we turn the clocks back and proceed from this point forth. Give us a call, 749-B105. Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys, will be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And it's going to be a great day. You know, I like it, the fact that the temperature is going to stay in the upper 60s. It's not going to be too hot. It's not going to be too cool to get out into the landscape or out into the yard. Maybe mow it if it's not too wet. And if it's a little wet, stay off of it until it dries out before you mow it. Get the leaves up. You know, especially if you had sown seed earlier this fall, and as that grass starts to get up and it gets developing, you certainly don't want to leave wet leaves lie around on that turf, because it could smother it, and all of a sudden everything that you worked hard to do can maybe turn out to be all for nothing. Right. So keep that in mind. It's very, very important.
Be a great day to get your third step down.
That as well. You know, we're right there at that point in time where that third step of the Fertilum three-step program goes down, our second fall application. Get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Pick up the orange bag.
And if you put it down in September, you're going to be doing it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you put it down in October, you still got time. So, but if you were one of the ones who got it down kind of on schedule, then you're due for that final step right now. And then you're done for the year. How about that?
You're finished. And if you get to do it, this weekend's going to be a perfect time to do it, because there's a little bit of rain in the forecast tomorrow.
Yep.
So, and I think a little bit next week. You know, tomorrow we're supposed to be in the 70s, so still a lot of things that we need to do. I know that I need to do. I need to still pull some annuals, clean out my containers, all that good stuff that I really despise having to do.
A lot of perennials are brown right now. Coreopsis, salvias. You know, if it's brown, cut it down. Go ahead, get out there and clean them up.
I hear you. You know, some things I like to leave in play. You know, I actually, talking about perennials and cutting perennials back, you know, Nepeta's still holding on a little bit.
Yeah, there's still a lot holding on. I'm just saying, like, the Coreopsis, at least at my house, they're done. I mean, I can clean them up. They're completely brown. And you want to let things, like your bulbs, like everything else, you want them in the bulbs in the spring. We want the perennials. So we want them to get completely dormant before you start cutting them all.
Absolutely. And if you want to catch up with this, you can certainly do that by checking out some of our podcast. And you can also certainly email us in and around the house at b105.com. We'll get back with you. You can also Facebook us. And if you go on Facebook, you got to like us. How can you not like us?
I was going to say, okay. How can you not like it? I don't understand that.
Yeah. And so
if they saw John, they might not.
Ooh, John.
I know, I'm picking
Mr.
on John
Clean,
today.
Mr. Clean over
Mr.
there.
Mr. Clean.
Yeah. So. Before we went into the break, hey, it's Saturday. We're in the fall. It's time to turn the clocks back.
That's great. I love this. I love falling back. We talked about it earlier.
Right.
I get an extra hour of sleep. I love it.
Do you, or do you stay up an extra hour?
No, I usually get the extra hour of sleep. I enjoy the sleep. So as I'm getting older, I'm finding myself, it's okay to go to bed a little earlier.
Right.
Now I don't have to.
Well, make sure you turn your clocks back, because you don't want to show up at work tomorrow an hour early.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, thank goodness with our phones, they do it for us now.
Well, the phones will do it for us. You know, what about the old clocks in the house or the alarm clock?
No, they're not.
No?
No.
Do you rely on your phone a lot as an alarm clock?
Oh, I do. Even this morning, I had to set it for 4:30 and 4:40. I double set it to make sure that way I'm not late for your show. But I always set two alarms.
I do too. I set my phone for 3:30 and my
3:30
for 3:30 and my other alarm.
Oh, that's right. You got to beautify yourself. Get your makeup done. Do your hair.
Yeah, I got to do that. Yeah, get ready.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cover boy on. I guess I don't know.
Your fifth cup of coffee.
Yeah, fifth cup of coffee. All that good stuff. But anyway, as we turn the clocks back, this is the time of year. It serves as a reminder. And when I say that, it's time to check the smoke detector. So, so important. Very important. And make sure that they are operating properly. Use a vacuum to remove any of the dust, any debris, or any of the webs. You know, hey, some of us have a few cobwebs around the house.
You'd be surprised.
You'd be surprised. And just keep those away and off of the smoke detectors, in addition to your carbon monoxide detectors.
Yep. Yep. Great time to just change those batteries. And you'll hear ads on the radio. You'll hear people talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the time. I mean, this is a great reminder to go ahead and change those batteries. And, you know, it.
Hey, what about those people that may not have a smoke detector, or they took the battery out 2 months ago, never replaced it, right. Or you don't have a carbon monoxide detector. Now's the time to go out, pick one up, install it yourself, or if you're not that handy, pay somebody to do it right. for you.
And
it,
some of them have batteries that last, the right. lithium ion batteries, and they're lasting up to 10 years now. So you can make it easy on yourself.
Absolutely. But this, what's most important is it could save a life.
Yeah.
That something that simple could very easily save a life. So keep that in mind. Also, you know, I'm a big advocate fan of checking and keeping fire extinguishers in play.
Sure.
You know, make sure that the needle's in the green zone.
Well, we've seen you cook a lot, so we know you need to have that close by.
I like that. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
Burn up a lot of stuff.
That's all right.
And, you know, where do you locate a fire extinguisher?
Kitchen's always a good one.
Kitchen's a good place.
There's a lot of fires there.
Right.
You know, usually anywhere where there's going to be a lot of flammable
materials.
Products, materials.
Garage, mm-hmm. perhaps.
Even
basement.
At the store, we have them, you know, by the straw bin. We have them over in the fertilizers and hard goods. And then we have them, you know, up by the kitchen.
Right.
We actually have one down on the first level as well, just in case.
You know, we're not trying to encourage you to become a fireman by any means. But, you know, if you can put something out that's relatively small, you can save yourself a lot of potential headaches down the road.
Sure.
And, therefore, less damage.
It also is a great reminder for people to talk to their kids about what their fire escape is in case there is...
Have a plan.
You know, have a plan. You know, you always hear about it. Most people, to be realistic, don't do it. I mean, be honest, you know. But now's a good time to go ahead and talk to your kids about it. You just never know. I mean, we're all starting to use little space heaters now. You know, right. Some of those, especially when it got cold. You know, there's a lot of those... Chinese fireboxes we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, you keep yours running 24/7.
24/7. So, you know, but there's a lot of things. Just now's a great time just to talk about it. You're sitting at dinner, just have a quick communication. It may save your kid's life. It may save your life. You know,
or practice it when you test your fire. You know, your detectors, your smoke detectors. And you know what's really important too. Is have a point, a place to everybody meets and shows up so everyone's accounted for. Be it out at the end of the driveway or maybe on a neighbor's porch.
Right.
So we all know that somebody has gotten out if that's the case. So that's very important. You know, something else I think is interesting too is, you know, a lot of us live in two-story homes. And if one of the escape routes is blocked, you know, there are those like drop ladders that are, they'll go right over the windowsill and drop right on down like a rope ladder. That would be something well worth investing in and easy to store underneath a bed. So just having those in bedrooms that have no, you know, no other access to getting out versus just the upstairs hallway or the downstairs steps. Right. That might come into play and be very important.
We take precautions on so many things, and this is one of those where I think, you know, you talk to different firemen and some different people that are in the industry that do the carbon monoxide testers or the fire extinguishers, you know, and you'll hear just stories, and a lot of it is just they're not prepared. Just, you know, we prepare for everything. We really do. We're a society in general that, you know, we have life insurance just in case something happens. We have health insurance just in case something happens. We have car insurance just in case something happens. You know, just being a little precautious, even in this part, very important.
Oh, I agree. You know, real quick before we take a break, what else? When I used to work at DHL, we would always have fire training, and we would put out kerosene fires, like Jet A fires.
Sure.
And it paid off one time. You know, we did have a situation, and in front of every aircraft at the nose, there's a huge fire extinguisher. And this is something I think that homeowners or parents should do. Just a little wood fire or something out away from the home, and let your kids practice so they're not intimidated.
Right.
You know, that's a good thing. So they know how to operate one of those extinguishers. It's rather easy. And again, we're not saying, hey, we want you to put out all the fires. No, you just might be able to save yourself from a disaster.
Just being prepared. Just be prepared is all we're saying. And then get that extra hour of sleep.
That extra hour of sleep and turn that clock back. 749-B105, Bob and Tony. Bob's subbing for Ernie today in his absence. So you're with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We have a great show for you. Hang out with us because we still have our plant of the week we're going to talk about, which is the amaryllis. We'll tell you all about that. We also, we're going to talk about mulch sometime this morning throughout the course of the show. Bob and I, a couple weeks ago, wanted to touch base on mulch and how important it is to mulch, especially during the winter months. It's not always just a spring and summer thing that we need to do. And
I've got some tickets that I'm going to give away later on here. About three pair of tickets to next week's Greater Cincinnati Holiday Market downtown. We do a small trade show on the weekend. It runs Friday, Saturday, Sunday from 10 until 5. It is about 350 one-of-a-kind boutiques and specialty shops.
Yeah, boutiques. That's right down your aisle.
You know me.
Yeah.
So it's my other side. And, you know, we go down there and we do some of our indoor stuff of the, you know, the garden show, like the signs and Christmas decorations and listen for your cue to call in. And when we give you that, we'll take, I think, caller number 5. And you can win a pair of tickets to next week's show.
It's when it kicks off, right?
It's downtown at Duke Energy Center.
Great.
It's presented by Honda, and it's really a neat show.
That's a Hart Productions.
It is a Hart Productions,
right?
It is, and there's some really neat gifts. There's clothing. There's food. You know, there's a whole lot down there.
Do you guys set up or do anything down there by chance during the holiday market?
We do the booth. Yeah, we do a booth.
You do a booth,
well.
Okay.
So
what do you have in the booth?
Our signage, Christmas ornaments, Christmas decorations, you know, any of those unique indoor gifts. It's for those who you really for something special to give somebody this holiday season.
Right.
There's a
right.
lot of stuff down there. Some really neat clothing stores or shops. And even for a guy, forgive me, but, you know, who's not a big shopper. I'm a terrible shopper.
You know, but it is that time of year. I know that we've been putting a lot of effort and so forth into getting the store set up for our Christmas open house, which is on the 19th of this month. And, you know, we have our artificial tree sale kicking off today. So it's not too early to think about the holidays. But as Ernie would always say as well, you know, let's not forget about Thanksgiving. That's a big one with him. You know, he likes to eat. He's thinking about the big bird. Who doesn't like to eat?
At least on this, in this group.
I know.
Mean, even with Ernie not here, you know, we all like our turkey dinner. Nothing wrong with that. Little mashed potatoes and gravy can't wait. It's going to be good.
Do you cook? Do you have Thanksgiving at your home? Or do you go over to your mom and dad's?
Well, yes, we go to my mother-in-law's. We go to my mom's. My mom always does a great job of cooking. My wife, we have her father over and the family, and we cheat.
What's that mean?
We do the Bob Evans turkey dinner where you know, turkey breast and all this, but everybody loves it. I never have any leftovers. That's the bad part.
Oh, man. Bob, isn't half of the fun of having a get-together is cooking and preparing?
See, you know, my wife doesn't really love food. So, and it's
well, how
it's
does she
okay.
survive?
She, you know,
on berries and nuts or what?
No, I mean, she'll eat turkey, you know, but and she'll have maybe she won't eat mashed potatoes. She has a texture issue, so she doesn't eat the mashed potatoes.
Issue. That's a first for me.
I tell you what, I have to give her full credit for somebody who doesn't like food to even prepare the meal that's already prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed. She does a good job with it.
Well, you better be because today's your anniversary.
I know.
So you better say you're impressed.
I am.
Yeah, you're sucking up right now.
I have to admit, though.
You're sucking up.
She has put up a long
deer. A shoe, Bob. So let's talk about deer, by the way.
Deer.
We didn't talk about them a couple weeks ago. Since you're such
that was your fault.
Since you're such a deer of a husband.
You got that right.
Yeah, but what can you do to protect your plants? Let's talk about that because they are destructive.
Yes, they are, especially the smaller trees. I mean, they'll destroy a new tree that you just planted. So you really want to protect it.
Right.
So a lot of people will go get the black corrugated pipe and put it right, you know, slice it up one side and then wrap it around the tree. That's fine if you take it off.
Right.
I don't like it. I don't particularly like it. But if that's all your option,
it beats a blank.
Better than nothing.
It definitely beats a blank.
Yeah.
Yes.
They make deer wraps that are like plastic fencing that are molded to fit up to like a 6-inch tree, and you can just wrap it right around. Mm-hmm. But then the light gets to it, the air gets to it, but it protects the trunk. That's right. One of my favorites.
Right.
You know,
right.
They come 2 feet high, 3 feet high, 4 feet high, you know.
And why do you like the mesh versus the corrugated plastic?
I love it because, once again, it allows sunlight in, right. Allows air in, allows moisture in. It also allows moisture to not stay in. You know, sometimes those black corrugated pipes, when the moisture gets in there, you have all this moisture sitting right around the trunk of the tree, which is never a good thing.
Right.
So, you know, they also make some other wraps that you can use to protect your tree. But the key on any of those, if possible, if it's something that's solid around the trunk and you can't see the trunk, you just see what you're using to protect the trunk, is make sure you take it off by spring.
Yeah. Oh, that's most important. Definitely. You got to remove, especially the black corrugated plastic.
And it's not too early to start. I would get some of those protections, I would get them out there now.
Yeah, and the bucks, you know, they're trying to remove, what's happening here is, during this time of year, bucks are trying to remove the velvet that's been growing on their antlers throughout the summer, and are using small trees to do this, and when they do this, they really, the trees sustain a lot of damage, and a lot of times, I'm often asked, what do I do now from the homeowner? What do I do now? And what you do now is you wait and see.
Yeah. You're kind of in a just...
You're in a dilemma. Yeah. You're waiting and you're seeing. And here's the problem. And this is why we're talking about this now. This is so important. When you purchase a new tree, it might be an expensive Japanese maple. Okay? My neighbors, the deer just tore up his weeping Alaskan cedar.
Oh, but he was. I bet he was devastated.
Devastated. You know, most of your young trees that the bucks can rub up against, once they damage that bark and it opens up and that tree starts to develop and get older over time, you know, sometimes those wounds don't really heal well.
Right. And it just makes it a soft spot for other predators to get in
right.
later on in the spring.
That
and
it
have
does.
All kinds of issues.
And what that does, it disrupts the phloem. That's the outer part of the tree just underneath the bark area, where all of the energy via the fluid of the system of that tree, that's what goes up into the tree during the early spring months, and that's what comes down through the tree going into the fall and winter months.
Right.
Once that's disrupted, it's never the same. So you need to protect your investment.
Right, absolutely. And if you can't get something to protect the trunk, even a little bit of fencing that's tall enough,
right.
and you just wrap it around, even if it's 3 or 4 feet
right.
around, just... anything to protect the trunk that's also not going to be detrimental to problems in the spring. You know,
so important.
Problems.
And, you know, you also have some of the products that work pretty well. And these products, they're guaranteed, but you really have to stay on top of your game. And we'll tell you about some of those products when we come out of the break. 749-B105, Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys.
And now's the time to call. We're going to take caller number 5 for the first set of tickets to the Greater Cincinnati Holiday Market. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. I am Bob Bard filling in for Ernie Brown, doing my best to try to fill those big boots that he
big
has.
Old boots.
So, and congratulations to Gina Jones, our winner of our first set of tickets. But don't worry. In the 8 o'clock hour, we'll have another set to give away. So just listen for your cue to call in.
Bob, you got connections.
Trying to help the people out.
I like
out.
You.
Trying to help my peeps.
I hear you. And we have Tricia with us from Williamsburg. Good morning, Tricia. How are you?
Morning. How are you?
Doing well. I think I sent you a message pretty early this morning, didn't I?
Yes, around 5 o'clock.
Were you still asleep?
I was.
Yeah, yeah. I said you're probably still asleep.
Good for her. Yeah. I wish I was too.
I do too. So, hibiscus. Is this the first time you've brought them indoors?
It is.
And you're seeing a lot of yellowing, I take it.
I am, especially, I've got one that is the regular blooming, you know, the single bloom, and
uh-huh.
then one that's the double bloom.
Mm-hmm.
The one that, the single bloom is the one that seems to be yellowing the most.
That's interesting, and it might just be because it's a different type, you know, it's been hybridized. But you still may experience some yellowing with the double bloom, but it's pretty common to see that, so don't be alarmed.
Okay.
It's typical. And what I would do, I would even trim them back a little bit. Are they tree form or shrub form?
I think they're shrub more than tree.
Yeah. You know, I like to trim them back a little bit, and I like to cut out some of the blooms because, you know, they're going to exert a lot of energy trying to support that bloom, which we don't okay. want them to do because we've changed that environment, what they were accustomed to living under, those conditions outside where they had a lot more sunlight, it was warmer, you were watering more often. That has all changed. So when you come indoors with those, you know, you're going to back off your watering a little bit and refrain from fertilizing because we don't want to really encourage a lot of new growth. What we're trying to do.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is just maintain that plant until we can get it back out next year.
Okay. Now, when we're having the stretch of warm days the next few days, should I take it back outside and bring them in when it's cold or just keep them in?
No, I would keep them in. You know, there's no sense in, you know, we still, it's getting acclimated, so keep it there. That's what it's going to be accustomed to as we go through the winter months.
Okay.
Place those by a window where they can get as much light as possible.
Okay.
And secondly, and most importantly, you're going to really want to keep a close eye out for any type of insect activity.
Okay.
For the most part, you might see maybe, you know, some aphid activity. Hopefully not. But a lot of times when people do fertilize in the winter and they encourage new growth, the aphids gravitate towards that new tender growth, and that's what they'll feed on. Are you familiar with aphids? Real little small insects. You'll see them typically around the buds, especially around the buds, and that's why I was trying to tell you, cut those out.
Okay.
And, you know, just go through the winter months, occasionally give it a drink if it needs a drink, and then next spring, after the danger of the last frost, you start taking it outside, get it acclimated. Don't put it all in the sun at once. It's like us going to the beach for the very first time without putting some sun protection on or without getting a base tan. You know, you just want to gradually acclimate it, and they'll respond favorably.
Okay.
And kudos to you. Yeah, you know, you'll never keep one or have one over, you know, throughout the winter until the next spring unless you try it.
Yes, and they told me that you can do this, you know, just bring it in. And then, like I said, when it started turning yellow, I'm like, I'm losing my, and I love these. They have been such great bloomers this year, and I was afraid I was going to lose them.
Oh, they're beautiful. And, you know, something else, I don't know if I have it in front of me, but I was just at a meeting the other day with Fertilume up in Indianapolis. They are coming out with, this is great too, a specific fertilizer just for hibiscus.
Oh, that'd awesome. Be awesome.
And I'll have to look at the analysis, but it's the perfect analysis, you know, with the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. It's ideal. And what I'll do, it's going to be available in under the Natural Guard name. No, I take that back. It's going to be under the Fertilume name. It's one of the new products for next year. Actually, when we go into our next break, I'll try and find out that information. But certainly pick that up and fertilize your hibiscus with those next year. And you have to follow up with us.
I will, because I'm excited to try this over the winter and see if I can keep them alive. And I definitely will follow up.
And you know what? If something happens, don't beat yourself up. You know, you gave it a shot and never give up doing so. And you, not only with hibiscus, homeowners can do this as well with, like, mandevillas, bougainvilleas, and other tropical plants, gardenias and so forth. Gardenias, they're a little more persnickety to work with, but it can be done. But have fun doing it and keep us in the loop next spring. How's that?
Will do. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome. Bye.
Hey, can you spell persnickety?
P-E-R. Yeah. All right. Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guy, 749-B105. When we come back, we're going to talk about our plant of the week. Welcome back to In and Around the House. The things we talk about during the break is great. If you're just joining us, good morning. Hope you have a big old strong cup of Joe. I'm probably into my fifth. Maybe more than that.
I think you're more than that. You've been making a run for the...
Oh, I know. I do that often. But right there before we went into the break, we were talking with Trish and earlier with Kim about hibiscus. And I was up in Indianapolis the other day, Fertilume meeting. And I just wanted to point out they're coming out with a hibiscus and tropical plant food. And that's going to come under the Fertilume name. And this is the beauty of it because you can buy it in either 4-pound bags, it's a granular type of fertilizer, or you can buy it in 12-pound bags. And the analysis 17710, which is perfect, it's ideal for hibiscus.
And this would be good for a lot of, there's a lot of people using tropicals for seasonal plants, you know, or in their containers because they're so colorful and interesting. And, you know, they just add another flavor to all the annuals that we have in this area. And I particular have a few palm trees that I love. So it'll be great to have a nice fertilizer
great,
for those.
Great stuff, especially for hibiscus. So you're going to look for this next year at your local garden centers and nurseries.
Waiting in anticipation.
Yes, that's our plant. We're going to talk about the plant of the week. You think that's funny, don't you?
Well, I was just, if, like you said, if people would listen to what weird goes on in between here, they might not listen to the show.
Well, we're talking about
or they might listen more.
Amaryllis. And when we talk about anticipation, okay, I don't care if it's your first amaryllis that you're planting or working with or if it's your 100th, everybody anticipates.
So explain what an amaryllis is to people who don't know.
It's a flowering plant that you can buy and pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries, and it comes in a huge bulb.
Mm-hmm. It's a big bulb, too.
It's a big bulb.
It's a big bulb.
It's a big bulb. And there's nothing, I don't know, there's something about seeing an amaryllis bulb breaking dormancy. Have you ever grown an amaryllis?
I have. We don't sell them really much because we deal with everything more, you know, we're still landscaping in the winter, so that's one I don't fool with a whole
right.
lot.
But like,
yes.
But like I said, no matter how many times you grow an amaryllis, you're endlessly teased waiting for the grand moment.
Wow.
As that large, prized, trumpeted-shaped bloom. Check it out on our Facebook page.
I love it. Look at you going deep.
Look at you going deep. Tony. I tried to get John
going
to play.
Going deep with Tony Works.
What we were laughing about in the break. Right here. Carly, that's a good old song. Carly Simon, that's going back. Is that telling you how old I am?
I'm glad Ernie does the bumper music. This show.
But everybody anticipates that beautiful bloom that you get. And the reason why I want to highlight the amaryllis today is because you're going to find the best selections right now at those garden centers and nurseries that sell bulbs. The amaryllis are at their best, at, you know, from a selection standpoint. And in the next couple of weeks, you need to plant that in order to get those blooms right there at the holiday season.
Right. So right now, if I'm coming into the garden center, I don't know really anything about it. I come to your store and I say, hey, I'm looking for this particular bulb. You know, what should I anticipate that I need to do? What am I going to find? What is the process? I know we need to plant it. Am I just buying a bulb? Am I buying a bulb and a dirt? What am I buying?
Well, you can buy it a number of ways. You can already buy it planted, or you can just buy the bulb. So the selection process is really important. Find the biggest bulb that you can find because you're going to get the biggest bloom production.
That's the way it works. The bigger the bulb, the bigger the bloom.
The bigger the bloom. Sometimes it's not uncommon to see two stalks come up and bloom. So that's why you want to look for that large bulb.
Okay.
And it's pretty much, it could be the size of a hardball up to a softball.
Yeah, they're pretty big.
They're pretty big. And when you select that bulb, look for the large bulb, okay? The bigger the bulb, the bigger the plant, larger the blooms. And like I said, sometimes it's not uncommon to get two bloom stalks, but the bulb should be firm. They should be dry. They shouldn't be spongy. They shouldn't be soft. Right. You know, or if there's a lot of discoloration on that bulb.
It's like going to the grocery and you feel the fruit, you know. You want to make sure it's got some firmness to it.
Well put. I like that.
There you go.
So you're handling all the fruit. I hope you wash your hands before you go to the grocery. You're handling all the fruit.
That's right, why I do.
Do you ever spray that stuff on it called Fit?
No.
Bob Fit, because he's handling all the fruit.
Yeah,
but you're right. You know, you want to check that bulb. The firmer the bulb, the larger the bulb, the better the bulb. Now, have you ever planted one?
Yes.
What did you do? Because everybody does this differently, and I think there's an element that really comes into play, and it's not burying that bulb too deep.
Right. That was my next question to you, just so listeners could get it. But that's one you don't want to plant deep.
No, you do not want to plant deep. You also, when you plant an amaryllis bulb, what's really important as well is that you use a good soil.
Correct.
Okay. And the container that you pick, that it drains. And when I talk about using a good soil, something that's peat moss based with sphagnum peat, also AKA that we call it Canadian peat.
Right.
That is a great soil to use with your bulb. And this is really interesting, too. This is really, really important. The size container that you use in relation to the size of the bulb should not be any more than an inch wider than that bulb is at its widest point.
Right.
very, very important.
Yes, you don't need a giant pot on this one. This isn't like the plant when we were talking about that, having a plant outdoors and needing some extra insulation, so to speak. This is one of those where, you know, not much bigger than the bulb itself is
wide,
perfect.
But deep, because it's got a pretty extensive root system.
Mm-hmm.
So you want it to be twice, you know, as deep as that bulb. Clay pots are perfect. You can also use plastic pots.
Sure.
But just be careful. So, like I said, the diameter of that pot shouldn't be any more than an inch wider than the widest part of that bulb. And when you plant it, you start filling the container with the sphagnum peat, with that peat moss. Fertiloom makes a great soil.
They do for this one.
Yeah, I like that. And what I'll do, I'll fill up the pot, the container with soil. I'll rest my bulb at the top, and then I fill up a little bit more around the side of it, leaving at least a third of the upper portion of the amaryllis bulb to half above the soil line.
Exposed.
Mm-hmm. And I'll firm it up with my fingertips. And when you water it afterwards, do not get water up on the neck of it. We don't want to risk that getting soft and rotting. So what you're going to do is water around the edge of the bulb, water thoroughly, then back off. And allow it to start to break dormancy before you water it again.
And how long will people have to wait for this thing to break dormancy?
It varies. You know, it depends on temperature. You know, it depends on the situation of the bulb. Sometimes you can see them where they're already starting to push. But you want to locate it in an area in the kitchen or in a room that gets as much light as possible. And then once it's planted, I like to occasionally fertilize with an all-purpose fertilizer, but I'm also going to use it at half strength.
Right.
Okay, so I'm trying to kickstart this bulb. Now, if you do this about 4 to 6 weeks before the holidays, you should see blooms by Christmas.
Which is why
is what we're shooting for.
Amaryllis.
That's what we're shooting for.
Yes.
So, caring for the amaryllis bulb after planting is relatively easy. And something else that comes into play here, somebody had called in yesterday and asked about, do you have shorter versions or styles of amaryllis bulbs? That has a lot to do with how much light they're getting and how much you water it.
How much they stretch, depending on that.
How much they stretch, mm-hmm. Every bit of that. So once you've planted the bulb, and what I've done before myself is I'll rotate it, because as that stalk starts to grow, you'll start getting leaves, and as the stalk starts to grow, you'll see it stretch towards the light. Just
spin it.
Simply spin it to keep it straight.
Right.
See, it sounds like you've done this several times.
I know a thing or two.
You know a thing or two.
I've done a thing or two.
But what I like to do, I'll only water when the top inch, maybe 2 inches of the soil around the bulb becomes dry. Then I'll water.
There you go.
Then I'll allow it to drain thoroughly. Then I'll place it back in its location.
And then how many different colors on the bulbs can people anticipate?
You know, there's a various number of colors on the bulbs. I mean, you can find them where some of them are salmon. Most are red.
Red.
A lot of people like the white.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's the striped amadeus. It's got like some markings out around the edge of the bloom itself. So there's a lot of various types that you can pick up. I think we probably carry, if you look on our Facebook page, I think we probably carry about 10 different varieties.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Maybe you should give me another one of these, too, also with the flowers for my anniversary. Then I can enjoy it for a little while.
I don't know about that, Bob. You're asking for a lot.
I am asking for a lot.
All right. Give us a shout, 749-B105. That's our plant of the week. Check out your local garden centers and nurseries. We're well-stocked with the amaryllis bulb. And just a little hint, they make great gifts for the gardener, even if you're a novice or you're an experienced gardener. Give us a call, 749-B105. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And it's going to be a great weekend to get some things done, especially if you're like me. I'm kind of a little bit behind the eight ball, so to speak. I haven't had an opportunity to mow the lawn, and I have leaves everywhere. They're in the gutter, so I need to get my act together, Bob.
Did you fertilize?
I've already fertilized back in September. I will probably fertilize tomorrow sometime in the morning.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's going to be 73 degrees tomorrow.
I'm
going to
be finished.
With a chance of rain, but, you know, it felt nice this morning.
It really did.
Coming in this morning, it was about 45 degrees, but it wasn't a cold 45. Like, last week, It was like 45 degrees, but it was cold. The wind was blowing. It was damp. Today felt pretty good.
Yeah, not too bad.
We're not getting any sunlight. I guess it's getting right. You know, it's not really
Not too shabby.
No, it's not really brightening up yet.
But still a good weekend to get some things done. And as we've been talking about the plan of the week, the amaryllis bulb and so forth, we have Nancy from Eastgate. She wants to talk about her dealings with an amaryllis. Good morning, Nancy. How are you?
Morning. I'm good, thanks.
So tell us a little bit about your amaryllis and how long have you had it? What color is it and all that other good stuff?
Yeah, I work at an office, a veterinarian office, and we got it last year for Christmas from one of our clients.
Uh-huh.
It's red. And I put it outside. It bloomed beautifully and everything last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put it outside for the summer because that's what my mom told me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I just brought it in, and by listening to you guys, I brought it in incorrectly in the wrong kind of pot, so I have to change that. But my question is that now that I brought it in, is there something different I need to do since it's already has its leaves and everything from the summer?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do I do it the same that you did?
Well, there are some things that you need to do, okay? And did you just recently bring it in before we started getting cold?
Yeah, I brought it in, I would say, last week.
And what I want to do, I want to kind of move backwards a little bit because this is really part of the whole deal with taking care of amaryllis. So if you're given an amaryllis and you grow one and it blooms for you and everything around the holiday season, the next step is what you did. Typically, a lot of people, we want to encourage you to take those outside. And that's after the danger of frost has passed and get them acclimated. And you place them outside in a shaded area, indirect area, or indirect light. And then you kind of get them into an area where they get about 6 hours of sun a day. Did it get plenty of sun?
Yeah, it was in a pot right outside our office. So, yep, it looks beautiful right now.
Perfect. Okay. Once you do that, music to my ears, this is what really has to happen next. After you bring the plant indoors, you store it in a cool, kind of a dry, dark location where the temperatures run about 50 to 60 degrees. And then what you're going to do is you want to allow that foliage to turn brown, dry out, to the point where you can cut it. Remember, what most people, when you see the amaryllis bulb, they're just a bulb, and you can see the neck of the bulb where it's been cut back. That's what we're trying to take it back to that original form, just like when we start them, like this time of year. And typically, you want to leave the bulb in the pot in an area where it stays dark for 8 up to 12 weeks.
Oh.
You don't want to water it. You don't want to fertilize it. What we're trying to do is get it to go dormant. Now, during that 8 to 12-week period, now you could put it in an area where it's dark, like in a garage or a basement or a closet.
Okay.
But during that period, that 8 to 12-week period, if all of a sudden you start to notice new growth appearing, then you bring it out and you start that whole life process back, that cycle. You know, you'll bring it out, you'll place it near a sunny window, and you'll start watering it again and lightly fertilizing it. And in about a 4 to 6 week period, you should see blooms again.
Okay.
Now.
So when I put it in the dark, am I putting it in a little dirt or no, I'm just putting it.
Is it still in the pot?
I took it out of the pot that it was outside and I planted it inside in a pot.
Okay. So leave it in the pot that's inside.
It's in the wrong pot though. I made it too big, so I'm going to have to get a smaller one.
Okay. You can do that. But at this point in time, don't really worry about changing the pot because we want it to go dormant. So we want that foliage to die back, to yellow off. Because what's really important here is allowing those, like when it, did you remember the big stalks, the big stems?
Yes.
Okay. After they bloom, what I like to do is cut that bloom bud off right away. I don't want that to set the seed. It takes energy from the bulb. Leave the stalk and allow that stalk, for future purposes, allow the stalk to turn yellow and brown off. And then that's when you cut the stalk back to the neck.
Okay.
Okay. What we're trying to do is allow that stalk, because it's still conducting photosynthesis along with the foliage like it did when it was outside during the summer months. We want that energy to build back up and go back to that bulb.
Okay.
And that's why fertilizing occasionally helps accentuate that. Okay. So yeah. Now what we want to do, don't worry about putting it in a right size pot. What we want it to do is kind of go dormant, die back, where you make the cut of the foliage to the neck, then put it in the proper size pot.
Okay.
And follow up with this. I'm anxious to hear how it turns out for you.
Okay.
Now,
I'll do that.
If you don't see blooms a lot of times after we take this approach, it's because of how things kind of transposed or how it died back, rejuvenating energy into the bulb. So we'll just push forward and try and promote that bloom again. Okay. You can keep amaryllis bulbs for a long time.
Yeah, I hear most people throw them away.
So. A lot of people do because they don't want to take the time and effort to do what you did.
Right.
But I'll try and post something. You know, if you send me an email, send it to in and around the house at b105.com, I'll send you some information on this.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, you
Bye.
Too.
I think people enjoy bringing things in and taking things in, you know, kind of like the tropicals, the hibiscus.
Right.
You know, it's fun.
Right.
If you don't have success, that's okay. But
you're giving it a shot. You have nothing to lose.
Yeah, nothing to lose. And it is rewarding all of a sudden to see it spring and see it come back. I mean, I enjoy doing it with some of the stuff that I have, some of my palm trees and different things.
Right.
I've had a palm tree now for 7 years, and I've taken care of it. It's big now.
Right. Nothing more gratifying and satisfying than that. And good luck to you, Nancy, and I wish you the best, and keep us in the loop and let us know how it turns out.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to focus our attention over into the Hoosier State. We have Larry with us. Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. You a big Hoosier fan?
Pardon?
I said, are you a big Hoosier fan? Indiana? IU?
I live in Indiana, but no, I'm
no. You're a UK fan, aren't you? I'm just kidding.
Nope.
But what's going on, bud?
Hey, I've got this hosta that I used to have in a fairly shady area, but it was one of those hostas that it just got really just too big, great big leaves, and the space was too small.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved it to a spot that where it gets a lot more sun.
Okay.
And the only problem is in the spring, the leaves come up, looks great and everything, and then the leaves start to kind of fade out and get almost translucent, and then they turn brown.
Okay. You know what that tells me? Go ahead.
And by the end of the summer, it's basically a bunch of stalks with half-dead leaves on it. It looks bad.
Well, I have to say, now, this is really an interesting topic, and I'm glad that you brought this up. And this is for a lot of people who have hostas. You know, is it a dark green, almost bluish green leaf, or is it a light-colored, variegated leaf?
It's kind of in between. It's kind of a medium green, but it has kind of a yellowish border to it.
Right. Most hostas would prefer to be in the shade. And what you're seeing with the sun is it's bleaching it out. It's too much heat.
Too much sun.
Yes, too much sun. I think if you get that in...
I wondered if that was it.
Yeah, that's what it is. Now, there are some hostas that will tolerate a little bit more sun, but those are the lighter colored leaves or the variegated colored leaves. But still, they appreciate a little bit of shade as well.
Okay.
But I'm rest assured, if you were to relocate that into a shady spot, maybe with some morning sun or an area that underneath some trees with some dappled light that comes in, filtered light, you'll be pleased to no end with the performance of that hosta.
Okay, well, I kind of suspected maybe that was it, and I sent you a couple pictures on Facebook.
Yeah, that was a couple. I thought you were calling in. Yeah, I thought you had mentioned you were going to call in about it eventually, so...
Yeah, that was it, so...
That's exactly it. I saw it. It looked really translucent, and it's really too much sun. Something else, too, keep them watered adequately and mulched. We're going to talk about mulching here in a little bit, too, because hostas love moisture.
Uh-huh.
But along with that comes slugs and snails. And, you know, there are some products that you can use and sprinkle around underneath hostas that keep that from happening. And it's very effective and it's easy to use. But if there's ever a point in time when you see your hostas where they look beautiful, then all of a sudden it looks like somebody went out there with a 12-gauge shotgun and just blew holes in it. That's an indication, a sign that you're having slug or snail damage.
Yeah, I actually thought of that this time, and so I put Bugagetta around,
around it. Yeah, perfect.
But in this case, I think you're right. I think it's probably too much sun, and I'll just have to find a new spot for it. I put it there just because it was a fairly large spot, and I thought maybe that would work well.
Right.
And it turns out the space is fine, but the location's unsuitable.
Well, you know what? You know, you get those types of hostas after they're, after they age and they come into their own, they're easily divided. And give some to some of your friends or go to, like, a plant swap. It doesn't take long for a hosta. If it's in its right location, it will put on, some phenomenal growth.
Yeah.
Try one called Sum and Substance. That loves sun. Keep it moist. That gets quite large, and it might fit that spot where you take this one out and relocate it.
Okay, Sum and Substance, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
All right. Cool. Larry, have a great weekend.
You.
All right.
You too. Bye.
We got to take another quick break, and Bob, you got some more tickets?
I do, to the Greater Cincinnati Holiday Market next weekend, Friday through Sunday. So we'll take caller number 5 to win a pair of tickets to go to the show. So this is In and Around the House. We'll be right back.
All right. 749-B105.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. I am Bob Bard, filling in for Ernie Brown, and we would like to congratulate Carol Fembers. Carol Fembers for winning the tickets to the Cincinnati Holiday Market. But no reason to get upset, Tony. Don't get all worked up. I have another pair to give away in the 8:30 times.
8:30 hour?
8:30 hour. How about that?
See, those are big shoes over there to fill.
See, what? Ernie is an amazing guy. He does such a great job. He's smooth.
Does that chair kind of feel worn?
Yeah, it does.
The sink down.
I'm not ready to fill his shoes. I just can't do it yet. I don't know if anybody can.
Boots. They're boots.
I know. They're boots.
Ernie will wear shorts with boots.
But Ernie is out on secret assignment. We don't know quite where he is, right?
He's missing. I was trying to get...
Missing in action.
Trying to get his picture put on a milk carton. He's missing.
Uh-oh. So everybody be out on the lookout.
Look out for Ernie.
We'll
watch out.
We'll put an Amber Alert out for him, right?
An Ernie Alert.
Ernie Alert.
Yeah, watch out. But, that was a great call that we had from Larry over in Bright. Hostas, I love hostas, and that's just one of those situations, where it's like going to the beach. Some of us tan a little easier and better than others, and that's the same way with a hostas.
And it brings up a great question. So, it's in a spot that's really in the wrong area. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about moving a hosta right now?
I would probably take my chances.
Oh,
hostas,
I would do it.
They're pretty resilient. I would take my chances. I would go ahead and move it.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have any problem moving a hosta right now.
All.
This weather is perfect. It's moist.
But here's a little trivia for you. I was on the a hosta website, the Hosta Society website, and if I'm not mistaken, I read this. It was a couple years ago, and I did not know this, but really, hostas put on their best root development in the month of August. So
they're in the heat, huh?
During dividing them at that point in time is really a good time to do that.
Hmm.
Late August, going right at the beginning of September, because of that. Now, you can divide them in the spring.
Sure.
A lot of people will do that. And I'm going to tell you the difference between dividing your hostas in the spring versus the fall. In the spring, as they start poking their heads up through the soil surface, where they look like asparagus spears.
Sure.
That kind of gives you a really good representation of what the eyes, where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make that decision where you're going to divide those once you lift those out and do the division process. Now, once you put them back into their new respective, spots, they're not as robust throughout the growing season. They won't die, but they're just not robust and give you that flair that you're used to seeing with the hosta.
Right.
Versus when you do it in the fall, they have a chance to go through a whole vernalization period again. That root system's developing because the ground's still warm.
Right.
And it's getting that root development. Therefore, it gets adjusted without trying to support what's up top during the fall and winter months. You have a plant that's ready to go next spring.
And I love to do it this time of year because we were talking 2 weeks ago about a frost. And, I had told you that I saw a small one. You said I haven't seen a whole lot yet.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had a good frost. We've had
a couple good frosts.
So now if you have to transplant something, now's a good time. You know, now's a good time. It's not going to hurt almost anything to go ahead and do it. You know, things are shutting down. They're going dormant. We finally got moisture in the ground. So if you have something to move, now's a good time to do it. Get out into the garden and do it.
And before you do the move, I have to encourage you, have the new site prepped and ready to go.
Yeah, so you can just dig it up and move it
over.
The
transitioning part of that goes a lot smoother, it's quicker, it's easier, then you're done with it.
And remember, when you are digging up a plant, dig a little bigger of a root ball than you think you really need, because you can't put anything back. If you cut them too short, you're cutting off roots, and that could put a tree through stress or a shrub through stress. So, you know, you want to get as much of the original soil that the roots are established in, you want to get as much of that as possible.
Take me through that process, because I want to ask you a couple of things that really come into play when we do this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pruning or trimming anything back?
I'm doing some light tipping with some hand pruners and cleaning some things up, and just doing a little bit of trimming right now. Not a ton, but a little bit.
Right. You know, hold on to that thought, because I think this is a great topic. 749-B105, Tony with Bob Bard from Bard's Nursery. He's filling in for Ernie this morning. We're your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. And if you're just joining us this morning, welcome. You're seeing a little bit of fog rolling here, Bob.
Yeah, you can't see downtown today.
I was
hoping I'd get a nice view of the city from up here.
Usually we do. And we've covered a lot of ground this morning. We've talked about a lot of different things, a number of things. And before we went into the break, we were talking about, you know, the fall being a great time to relocate some plants.
Yep.
And it's obviously, we all know this, it's one of the best times to plant plants, you know, especially trees and shrubs.
Oh, now's a great time for
it. It's a great time. But before we went into the break, we were talking about lifting existing plants, and like Larry is wanting to relocate his hosta, which we commented on that.
Right.
You know, take me through that process, because there's a couple of things. If I'm going to relocate a shrub, depending upon where it is in the stage of, like, for example, I have some burning bushes at the garden center that are still really holding strong on its foliage. I like to wait until the foliage drops.
Okay.
You know,
and that's fine. If you're able to do that, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say for this instance right now, mm-hmm. you're getting ready to do a new sidewalk, and you have to move that burning bush.
You got to move it.
Okay, you have no choice. Let's just say we've got to do it. So what we're going to do, first of all, we want a really good sharp spade. You know, we want to be able to get...
Not a dull one.
Not
one it's all bent up
gotta,
on the end like Ernie would use.
It's got to be like you, the sharpest tool in the shed. So so we're going to go ahead and root prune this. So what we're going to do is we're going to be, depending, let's say it's about a 2 foot high, 2 foot wide burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start, if we can, at about the drip line first with a little bit of root pruning. And you're going to take the spade when I say that, and you're going to basically shove it straight down into the ground. And you're going to start to get a feel of whether you're cutting into any roots or if it's just all
right,
dirt.
Right.
And I like to start wide, because you can always cut a little bit of soil off. You can't put roots back on. So start there, and you're going to kind of just work your way all the way around the plant, and you're going to root prune all the way around. You're not going to do any prying at this point. You're going to actually try to cut the roots first before you start any prying. A lot of people want to shove the spade in the ground and just put all the pressure they can, push down on it, try to pop the plant up. But that just tears roots, and it's not good for the plant. So we want to actually try to get this thing in a whole pot, so to speak. Like when you buy it, it's in a pot.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
When you root prune, are you going to lift it that same day, or do you root prune and then come back like a week or two later?
That would be great if you're able to go ahead and prune it now and then move it in a couple of weeks. But let's just say you got to move it.
Got it.
So we're going to go ahead and root prune, and then we're going to start kind of feeling how the root ball, if it's moving, if it's coming up fairly easily. You know, if it's coming up easily, if you've root pruned well, usually you can lift that plant right out, take it to your new hole.
Got it.
We'll go into planting in just a minute. Let's say it's a little bit tougher. You know, you've kind of started working, but you haven't really cut enough roots. Well, move in 3 or 4 inches. And then kind of work your way back towards the trunk. Then go ahead and root prune around again. You're going to find you're starting to cut a lot more roots as you get closer to the root ball, or as you get closer to the trunk. So we did a good job root pruning. We pulled out. We have a good solid root ball with some exposed roots. No problem. We're going to go ahead and move it to the site we've already prepared. We're going to put it down in the hole. Make sure it's ground level. You want it pretty much at the level it was. And then we're going to go ahead and add some compost manure, some peat moss, some sort of soil amendment, mm-hmm. because we're going to treat it like a brand new plant now because we just moved it. The soil that came out of the hole originally from where you dug the new spot, use that to bury and fill in the rest of whatever is left open, and then a light mulch on top.
I like it. What about, now we're talking fall. Mm-hmm. Let's just turn that over, flip it over, and let's say you do it in the spring real quick.
Okay.
Will you fertilize, and what will you use?
I would, you know me, I love the Fertilum Start and Grow.
Got it.
Because it's a slow, continuous feeding.
I agree.
You could also use a root stimulator.
I agree.
Which is great, especially if you're going to do it in the spring, to help promote more roots so the plant establishes a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two that I would probably
use. I agree. I just want to flip that over because you would take a little different approach in the spring than you would the fall, because we don't want to encourage new growth late in the season with a fertilizer.
I would definitely not fertilize this fall.
That's just why I brought that up. Yeah. Okay.
And then don't forget, if it's dry, it does still need a little water.
It needs to be watered in. Right. All right. We're going to head over to the Finneytown area. We have Dee with us this morning on the line. Good morning, Dee.
Hi. Good morning.
What's going on in Finneytown? You seen a little bit of fog your way, or is it clear?
Well, it looks pretty clear. No, wait a minute. Maybe there is a little bit of fog out there. I didn't really look out.
We have a good old fog bank down here.
Oh, do you? Yeah, it's closer to the river.
Mm-hmm. So what's going on?
We have a pine tree out front that we had to cut back a bunch of the limbs, so it's probably about 5 feet from the ground where there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wanting to plant something down around there, and I really like the looks of elephant ears.
Right.
Do you think those would work under there if I was to plant some?
Ooh, you know, it's a great question, and I got a couple things to throw in there and spin on this, and Bob, I want you to chime in any time. How long has the pine tree been there?
Oh, my gosh. Probably 20 years.
Okay. A lot of shade or sun in these areas where you would plant the elephant ear bulb?
It'll be morning sun.
Morning sun.
Mm-hmm.
I would want more sun on an elephant ear, although a lot of people think that they're strictly shade.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure
about.
No,
the more sun you get, the bigger they get. But here is the thing I think that comes into play without me really knowing. And there's an element that comes into play here that pH levels for various plants is of the essence, most important.
Mm, okay.
Now, I don't know what that pH level or preference is of the elephant ear bulb, and that's why I'm kind of like, this is interesting. I would have to do a little research, which is not a problem. But if you ever notice what's pretty typical about the underneath area around pine trees, especially those that have been there for a long time, is that there aren't any weeds there.
Right. Right.
And that's because over the years, so many needles have dropped, and that's an acidic kind of element. And pine trees have a knack or an ability to keep weeds at bay underneath them. I do not know if that would prohibit an elephant ear from performing well.
Oh. Well, you know, there was some kind of ivy growing underneath that, and my husband killed it all with Kilzol.
Okay.
So everything was, whatever was under there was killed off.
Okay.
So I don't know if that would make a difference with the pH level.
Well, I think ivy's pretty tough. I mean, I'm talking about like some other weeds. And
right. Yes, there wasn't.
But, you know, Bob, what do you think there?
I think as long as the mulch needle bed, you know, how much thickness there is to how many needles have fallen over the years, might have to rake some of that out, get down to the original soil. Add some soil amendment. You're not going to be right up underneath the tree anyways because you're going to need more sun than that. So you're going to be out towards the edge anyways.
Right.
Probably if there's enough sun, I think you'll probably be okay, you know, further out. I think if you go up by the trunk, I think you're really going to run into issues. And I think it'll be more with sunlight than anything else.
Right. Yeah, they would have been out along the perimeter there.
And I think if you're out far enough, I think you'll be just fine. And but it is going to depend on how much sunlight.
Right.
Hits and, that spot.
You know, now, Dee, here's something interesting. Now, I'm seeing where I'm looking in a pH book where elephant ears like to be a little acidic. So around the 5.5 range up to 7. And 7 is considered neutral. Okay. So there might be some play here.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And the only thing you're going to have to do is give it a shot. And if it works, it works. That's great. Right. If it doesn't, it doesn't. You know, it's all about what you experience and see if there's enough sun there. But what else I would encourage you to do is let's get a soil sample and see where it is. But I would venture to guess it's more on the acidic side.
Right.
So if it's really acidic, then you want to add a little bit of maybe lime to it to bring it up to that 5.5 to 7. Or if it might be there ideal for it. But you'll have to lift the elephant ear bulb come wintertime.
Right, yeah. You know what? I had some, and I put them in my shed, not thinking, in a bag, and they got moldy.
Now
I'm trying. I got to find some more, and I can't really find any. I'm thinking I'll probably have to get them online.
Yeah. Which leads to another topic we're going to talk about when we come back out of the break. But, Dee, let us know what you do.
Okay.
Find out what the pH level is and start with that. And then follow up with us and let us know how it goes.
Okay? I'll do that.
You have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, thanks.
You too. And, you know, Dee just brought something up I want to talk about when we come out of the break. Ordering on the Internet plants or mail order. I want to spin that one up a little bit, Bob. 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And a great way for you to keep in touch with us or catch up with us, one is always feel free to email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. If you want to check out a past show, you can certainly go out there to our website and get onto the podcast. And John also keeps that on our Facebook page, by the way, don't you, John? I believe so. And always ask us or stay in touch with us on Facebook. We'll always get back with you. Maybe not that same day, but rest assured, I'll get back to you at some point in time within reason. And, you know, we've covered a lot of ground this morning, Bob, and something that when we just talked to the caller a moment ago, Dee, about the elephant ears and so forth, she brought up something that's really been a hot topic in recent years, and that's mail ordering plants. Mail ordering, various things, internet ordering with plants. It is often, but it's kind of weird. It's like almost being pregnant, I guess, when I say that, stupid.
Wow.
But, you know what I'm saying. But
okay.
When we get a lot of deliveries, various, you know, from the UPS guy, I'll see plants, like tomato plants on that UPS truck.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Why would you, like, go online and order a tomato plant when you could easily go out to your local garden center or nursery and pick up a tomato plant, or maybe start your own from seed.
Right.
And
get to see what you're buying.
And get to see what you're buying.
You know it's bug-free because you can sit there and look at it. You know, you can talk to the guy who grew it. Like, if you come to your store, you come to mine, you can talk to them. What pesticides did you use? Or, like in our case, we're not using any pesticides on our fruits and vegetables and any of that because I don't like to use it on anything I'm going to eat. So, you know, I guess people would do it because of the ease of...
Is it the millennials that are doing this primarily? And that's a certain age group of people that really are internet savvy. Is it important to get your plants online versus go to a garden center? You're certainly not going to get the information, I think, that's necessary to be successful when you garden. Just buying something online.
Sure.
Plus, those tomato plants I'm telling you about and various other things, they're being tossed around, tumbled around.
Don't know how long they've been sitting on a dock or on a box or in a truck.
Hot truck, right. Mm-hmm. So I don't really, I would like to hear somebody give us a little bit of their experience when they've online ordered a plant or a shrub or what have you. What did you really get?
Sure.
Were you misled? Did you get what you ordered? Did it arrive in a timely fashion? Was it healthy looking? Was it in good shape? What shape did it look like?
Because everything on the internet is true and perfect, right?
As far as I know.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure.
But, you know, I we were up here at the Fertiloom meeting, this roundtable meeting up in Indianapolis this past week. And, you know, this was brought up as a topic, you know, a roundtable discussion. You know, a lot of people are buying online.
Right.
You know, and Amazon.com is a huge organization, a big internet gathering ordering machine. And, I mean, you can virtually buy almost anything you want on Amazon.com. They're getting into the grocery business. But at some point, would you order a Japanese maple online? I want to know who would order a Japanese maple tree online. Would you do it, or what would you want to know? Yeah. What would you want to see?
Mm-hmm.
And then would you be home when it was delivered? Where would it be? You know, there's so many things that come into play.
Right.
But people are doing this.
Mm-hmm. And that's where this show, I mean, we can go back to our local leaders and our local stores, and this is where the big advantage there still is when you go and I come to your store and I'm buying the three-step. And it's not just I ordered it online and, you know, I got to do it and, you know, I can talk to you and say, hey, you know, what's my setting? It says it on the bag, but you know, as I do, you adjust your settings occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not exact science on the bag. It just can't cover everything. It's a label because it has to be there.
Right.
But it cannot get the good information that it can get from you who says, this is how I do it. You know, the guy who lives here. And it just can't get that information online.
And do you get that continued service? Like, okay, what do I do with it in the winter? Wherever you bought it from online, can they tell you what you do with it in the winter?
Mm-hmm.
No, more than likely not.
No.
Can they tell you how you'd want to fertilize it?
Well, there's even some stores you can't get that from. You know, there's some big box stores around here you can't get that kind of information from.
Here you go. We have Patty with us from New Richmond. Patty, give us your opinion with online ordering. Have you done it, and what have you bought?
I have a spring birthday, and my children know that I love to garden.
Yeah.
So they like to get me gardening-type gifts, which I appreciate. My daughter ordered online multiple plants and shrubs. I mean, she spent probably $400. The order was delayed. We got about 25% of the order. What did come in did not produce. It was six. We didn't get anything that looked like the pictures, and they did not grow well and did not do well. Now, I have stopped by Bard many times, and all of the plants that I've purchased there have performed well.
Now, how old is your daughter? Is she a millennial? Does she do a lot of online ordering, obviously?
She does a lot of online ordering, and she's an avid gardener as well.
Mm-hmm. Does she still, based on what you just experienced?
Since that experience, it was about 2 years ago, she has not ordered any plants online because she did not get a refund when she said that the plants didn't come in. There were various reasons why the season, it wasn't quite yet late enough to plant these specific plants.
Right.
And the orders, I mean, it was all jumbled together. They weren't labeled well.
Right.
They were twigs. The photos were large, healthy plants, and we received twigs, a little bit of a stick and a root. And I did plant them because they were a gift.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But maybe 25% of what I planted grew, and they did not do well and weren't the species that I had expected.
Very interesting. You know, so you felt misled.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, I mean, we all have ordered online, and there's things that you can do online. And I think there's things that you cannot do successfully online as you could, staying local. But perfect point in case, and thanks for your testimonial. You know, it wasn't long ago, a couple years ago, up at the Independent Garden Center show up in, it was up in Chicago. There was a major online gathering company there searching for large growers that us as nursery people buy from because they want to be the number one plant purveyor online in the next 2 to 3 years as their goal. And, you know, when I see things tossed around in trucks or, like you said, you're being misled, you see this beautiful picture, you're seeing the end result. You're not seeing what you're buying. And sometimes that gets a little concerning to me. You know, Bob, that's so interesting. And
we're also talking to a lady who knows how to garden. So she got plants in and knows how to take care of them.
Right.
And she still had a lower success rate. I mean, I can understand if somebody got some plants, they really don't know gardening. They don't know how to plant. They don't know how to do things. And they maybe make mistakes planting. And that's why they have bad success. But Patty, she's a gardener. She knows how to, she could probably take things that are sick and still fix them. And she was only at a 25%.
Yeah, what's
rating.
That? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But
I've ordered plants from reputable companies to come in and grow. And I can tell you, I've gotten things in where I'm like, what is this? This isn't what I paid for. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're damaged and they're bad. And sometimes we can get refunds from because we're buying direct from a person we buy from regularly. You know, but a lot of times, you know, there's some other issues. And
right.
And I love some of the delivery right. guys. We have some great ones that run into the store that I know personally.
Right.
But, you know, sometimes things get tossed around.
They do. Patty, you know, great testimony. Thank you for the information. I want to know other people. If you online ordered, have you experienced what Patty's experienced? Is your experience better? Is it, where is it? Because I'm really, really concerned about it.
You know, I got a great experience for everyone. So it's two free tickets to the Greater Cincinnati Holiday Market Show. And let's take caller number 5 at 749-B105 to win a pair of tickets for next weekend's show. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. I'm sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to step on you, but tell us who our winner was.
Yeah, I can't believe I'm hurt. You stepped on me. So.
I mean, you okay? I don't weigh as much as Ernie. If Ernie would have stepped on you, it would have smashed you. He would have smashed
you. Big boots. So, Derek Conley is our final winner of the Cincinnati Holiday Market presented by Honda. It'll be Friday next week, Friday through Sunday from 10 until 5. It is a cool show if you're looking for unique gifts, clothing items. Really, there's 350 local vendors that are down there. You can find just about anything you want. So really a cool show. Catch up and stop in and say hi to the girls in the Bard Nursery booth as well. Teresa and Elizabeth.
And Bob.
I won't be there.
The girls.
This is the girls.
Bob,
they take
the
care
girls,
of it.
The girls, Bob.
So. And I do got to give a special shout out because today is my 22nd anniversary to my wonderful bride, Elizabeth. Happy anniversary. I love you. Thanks for being there and putting up with me.
Oh, Bobby, you're so dear.
I know. Dear.
Dear. We were talking about dear earlier. You wanted to finish that topic anyway because what did you want to add to that?
Well, I was just going to talk about I always hear the old remedies, you know, people doing their own thing with dear and what else they can do. And there are a lot of products out there. You know, but I've also heard the old Irish Spring, you know, get the old soap and hang it up in the tree and the scent keeps them away.
Whistle it.
So I that's not.
Can you whistle it?
No, I cannot.
I already uses his hair. He says he's very effective with it. You know, he's got that real pretty long
hair. I've heard hair.
Cut it. Yeah.
I've heard you cut that and throw some hair down in there.
I've heard people, do you know anybody that's ever gone to a barber shop or a beauty salon, picked up hair and used it effectively?
No, I mean, maybe their own hair, I've heard people, but I haven't heard people go to the beauty shop and collect
hair.
Does
that really, really work? Now, okay, you use Irish Spring?
I've heard, well, I don't.
Yeah, but if you do.
But I have had customers swear it works.
Have you used anything else or yourself? Do you have deer issues after an independence?
In independence where I'm at, I don't have any deer issue, ever. I mean, I never have an issue with deer. We don't even have a whole lot of rabbits running around causing a lot of trouble either. So I don't worry about it. But I do have areas in the tri-state where I help customers. Mm-hmm. And what I've found is those who have deer issues, one, if you can't do like a deer netting, deer fencing, something to protect your trees or your shrubs, that's the easiest way.
Right.
There's deer scram. There's, you know.
Which I like a lot.
Yeah,
I like
this deer one scram. Works. Liquid fence.
This one works. You're going way back. That's a fertile.
That goes back.
Yeah, I don't think that's it doesn't exist anymore.
No, it doesn't.
No, but that was very effective that was one where the deer would take a bite,
mm-hmm.
and that was it.
Yeah, there's all kinds of remedies out there, but what I found is you can't use the same one over and over and over and over. You got to rotate them if you really want to have success.
I think I agree with that. And there are some people that probably argue that. I think if you do rotate it, I think you're keeping the deer on their toes,
mm-hmm.
or on the hooves, so to speak.
Yes.
But the thing what you're trying to do is stop that habit of them stopping in your yard. It's almost like somebody going to work every day, and you have to stop for that coffee or that latte or that bagel.
Six cups like you
six
already
cups
this morning.
Like me. I probably had more than six.
I think you have. You're going to be wired today.
You know, Bob, I have a long day ahead of me. I can't just go home and nap like Ernie does.
Well, hey, you know.
I have to work.
If you have that much energy, you can come help us close down the greenhouses. We're gonna put the plastic on all the cold frames today. It's not a good day. Not a good day to be at Bard Nurseries. So please come visit me. That'll give me a break You know,
bring every customer in the Amelia area, go to Bard's and help him with the plastic.
From anywhere, you can come from anywhere. So, or get me out of doing all the plastic. So.
That would be funny if you had like 12 people, 15 people listening to this show come up there and give you a hand.
It's a long day if you're on your knees sometimes nailing the nail guns, you know, holding the plastic down. Oh, yeah. It's a long day today.
I remember our old greenhouses, we used to cover those, the old wooden houses, every year with plastic. I don't have to do that anymore.
You don't miss it, do you?
Not at all.
Speaking of getting ready for winter, we also, you know, we talked about deer. Thank you for bringing that back. But we never really got to maintenance, you know, getting those leaves out of the plants if you can right now. You know, when the leaves are falling and they're sitting in the plants, now is you want to get most of those out of there if you can. A light rake, your hand works great. Leaf blower, if you're not, you know, running it at full steam, you know,
use a leaf vac. That's a great tool to have. You know, something else, you know, talking on the same line of the leaves, you know, we've had some moisture and so forth. You know, if you did sow grass seed a month or so ago and you have a new lawn coming on, so to speak, coming into play, you do not want to allow leaves to lay on that lawn wet.
You don't.
That's one of the worst things that you can do.
Yeah, it's going to kill that tender seed that's coming up.
It'll smother it like nobody's business.
If you sowed it by about October 11th, you've got grass. You should, unless something went wrong. You really should have a good stand of grass. You know, you'll probably even mow it this year.
Well, I hope so. I think we'll get another couple of mowings in. Speaking of, still, I don't want you to notch it down. Mow tall. You know, we still want to retain some of that moisture in the ground as best we can, just so things, you know, are set up for next year. And also, you know, this is going to be a great weekend to get that final Fertiloom three-step program down.
Yeah,
If you did it in September.
Right, because if you did it in October, you know, if you did it on the 1st, we're right at about 36 days, you're probably okay. You know, you want to be 35 to 42 days, somewhere in between there. You know, so there are some people did it really late. That's okay to be late. You can get it close to Thanksgiving. It's not going to hurt anything. But it is supposed to rain, and I know you're this way, and I like to put it down and then let Mother Nature water it in.
There's something about when it rains. It's totally different than whenever you water yourself. Okay. It's night and day.
It is.
But take advantage of that. You know, the moisture level's there. It's perfect, and it's really going to set the stage for next season for your lawn.
Yep. Now, I got a question. Now, we're getting ready to take a break here, but I got a question for you. I want to ask what you think about putting down a weed prevention this time of year to help prevent those winter weeds. So we'll get to that in your answer.
749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. We've covered a lot of ground this morning, and if you happen to be just getting up to, you're probably more than likely to look outside and see it's a little foggy. But I'm sure it's going to dissipate somewhat. We're going to be in the 60s, and tomorrow, I think in the low 70s, a chance of rain tomorrow. So I think nonetheless, we're going to have some decent temperatures to get outside and do some things, some last-minute things that we need to get caught up with around the house, around in the landscape. I know I have quite a bit on my to-do list, and I'm going to try my best to get it done. And if you want to catch up with us, you can certainly do that by catching a past show on our podcast. You can also email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com, or certainly go out on our Facebook page, like us, ask questions that way as well. We'll stay connected with you. And you can also see on our Facebook page that we have posted some information on our plant of the week that we talked about earlier, the good old amaryllis bulb. And Bob, I think that when we talked to Dee earlier from Finneytown, I think she's back on the line again. She wants to tell us about her online ordering experience. Welcome back, Dee. What do you have for us? Was it positive or was it negative?
Well, it was actually positive, but it was 20 years ago. And I ordered, we had just put it in above ground pool, and I wanted something to go around it. So I ordered about four forsythia bushes and two rows of Sharon's and planted them around. They came in as sticks, and that was it. I go, oh, no. But I planted them.
Right.
And the rows of everything grew up wonderful. The rows of Sharon, that was a bad mistake because the flowers kept going in the pool. So I replanted those elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they are still going to this day. all of them.
Well, that's awesome. But I have to ask you this. Do you still support your local nursery, or
oh,
do you still?
Of course
still,
I do.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Music to my ears.
Plants online.
You know, it's all about locals, and always keep this in mind, and it sounds like you certainly do. On average, 67 cents of every dollar you spend, Dee, stays local in the economy. And that's what we want to really promote. And,
exactly. I know that.
I know you know that.
And I always do.
And thank you for sharing. And always feel free to call. And thank you for being a part of the show.
Okay.
Have a good weekend. All right. Bye-bye.
And speaking of supporting the economy, let's get back to my question about getting some herbicide, weed prevention.
So a pre-emergent.
Why would you do it now? I mean, I know the answer, but why would you do it now? What's the advantage?
Why would I do it now is because we still have that potential element of some of the winter annual weeds germinating that may not have already germinated.
The ones we see in February.
Yes, like henbit, bittercress, yep. things like that, purple dead nettle. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that we typically will see and are the most aggravating, but ultimately they end up dissipating, dying out because of the summertime temperatures.
They do, but they make a mess in the spring, and they make your beds look really bad in the spring.
Right.
And you can prevent some of that. You're not going to get them all. You never do. But a weed prevention now could really do a big plus.
I agree. I still think you would get a great deal of benefit from that.
I do, too.
And that's using high yields, turf and ornamental, weed and grass stopper with Dimension, which I love Dimension because you get that extra 30 days or that extra month of protection from Dimension. Secondly, I feel and know that it's better priced than its competitor, Preen, which Preen's a great product, don't get me wrong, but I have to give the slight edge and the advantage to high yields, turf, and ornamental weed and grass stopper. We sell so much of that. I use it. It's awesome.
It works.
You know, and I say this all the time. If you've been a Preen person, I'm okay with that. I sell that too. But I'm going to steer you in the direction.
Well, if you come and you ask.
Of Dimension.
Which one would you use?
Exactly.
And if you ask me, which one would you use? I'm using the same thing I'm going to sell to customers. It's the same thing you can go and you can get at any of your local leaders that support this show and any of your local independent garden centers that carry Fertilone products.
Absolutely.
It's a great product if you, you know.
And when you find the high yield product out there that we talk about often, in addition to Fertilume and in addition to the Natural Guard products, all three of those products fall underneath the Fertilume company name, which is VPG, which is a voluntary purchasing group that was made up years ago. And, you know, they support our local economies and they support our local businesses. And they're great products. They're just three different names. And we had this discussion the other day. You know, those of us who are accustomed to using Fertilume, we're always saying things like, why can't we just put Fertilume's name on that high yield bag or on that high yield product? But just the opposite is being said down in the South.
They would use high yield.
They love high yield. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why can't we put the high yield name on a Fertilume product? Right. So it's just the opposite, and it's what we're all accustomed to using. But nonetheless, they all fall underneath the same company name. And they're wonderful products.
Right.
And
you're going to the garden center anyways to get your third step.
Right.
So get the weed prevention. And really, I need to do this. The reason I brought it up is I need to do this. I have, last year, I missed it for a couple of years. And so the bittercress in my landscape beds, they're a mess.
What's horrendous?
And they're
now,
they're
Bob, you're not setting a good example, buddy. I'm sorry.
I'm taking care of everybody else. They're way more important than my beds.
That's supposed to be curb appeal.
It is, but everybody else is way more important than me. So I got to make sure their yard looks perfect.
Bob, a pleasure.
Always
good to have you in the studio. I know they're big boots to fill of Ernie's, but nonetheless, you do a great job.
Thanks.
And Ernie and I will see you next week in and around the house, and have a wonderful weekend.